We have room for you. You take a breath. All right, when you're ready.
I don't know. Are they ready? Oh. And there's someone here to tell us about how we can help, how people who are about to be reintroduced to the population after incarceration. We have in studio with us Detective Kim Boguki.
Very good.
Nice. I got a very good from Kim.
I've been called a lot of things. You did very well.
I'm going to go with officer. I know. I don't want to get it wrong with an
detective.
Officer, Andrea.
Detective.
Yes. On top of everything else.
Absolutely.
People can sort of have access. Oh, do you want headphones?
No, am I close enough? Yeah.
Come closer. We want to hear your outrageously wonderful voice and the incredible things that you're going to say.
Thank you.
The closer you are to a microphone, I think the richer your voice sounds. I know people always kind of get, yeah.
Perfect.
Make that equipment yours.
Exactly.
Thank you, first of all, for joining us. I know that you are in town for this film preview in Chicago.
Correct.
And you probably have a lot of different interviews that you're doing, so we appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule.
We're the first, though, right?
You're the first and the only, but we're doing a pretty big thing in Elgin tomorrow.
Very
big reentry
cool.
summit, and then there'll be a documentary screening, too, that we can probably put up on your website. We'd love to have some people come out and see the full doc.
That's awesome. I'll give you the background of how we met you, Kim. Lizzie Coghill, a dear friend of mine for many, 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 many years, who's in studio here, the owner of Silver Lake Golf Course in Orland Park, Illinois.
I've never met anyone who owns a golf course. Go ahead.
She's the best.
She's the first for everything.
Yes, so it's amazing.
She's the absolute best. And she said, you know, you have to meet my friend Kim. She's a police detective from Seattle, and she started basically The If Project, which is remarkable. It's theifproject.com, and you've made a documentary about this, and we'll just toss it to you and tell us about this documentary and tell us about The If Project.
Wow, that's a 10-year story. We're 10 years old this year, which is pretty remarkable. It started back in 2008 when I was asked to work with a group of girls whose mothers were incarcerated. And prior to agreeing to do that, I said I'd really like to go inside the prison and ask the mother's permission so that they weren't freaked out that the police were actually doing work with their moms without them being involved. So I went in, and I would say that March day really changed my life, because I had a perception of the people that I had been locking up for 20 years. And what I walked in and saw was a bunch of people that looked like all of us in this room that just had made, you know, potentially some of them a bad choice that cost them a lot of years, and it would also remove them from their family. Mm-hmm. So Kathleen Horan is the producer of the If Project documentary, and she actually started, we got together and started talking with the women inside, because one of the women on her own, when I went to that walked in that first day and I met with the mothers, I asked them the question, if there was something somebody could have said or done to change a path that led you here, what would it have been? And unbeknownst to me, one of the inmates, Renata Abramson, took it upon herself to ask the other inmates to answer that question. And I didn't know that was happening. And 2 months later, I walked back in and Renata handed me a stack of papers. Oh. And the IF Project was born. So everything that's happened in 10 years has been pretty organic, but everything that we've done in the last 10 years, from the documentary to the 8 programs that we've written from the answers to that question, from women, men, and juveniles that are incarcerated, has come from the answers to those questions, and then sitting down with the people that we're trying to reach and help so that they don't have to keep going in and out of the system.
Andrea shared the trailer with me last week, mm-hmm. and I was struck by the moment one of the women said, if someone had told me the world needed me. And that has stuck with me, because we've been talking about also suicide prevention too, and I think that there are people in every walk of life who don't realize. We've had a listener call up and tell us that she thinks about taking her life. And that's one example of whether it's hurting yourself or wanting to hurt others or putting yourself in a situation where you just don't care about what happens to you or those around you, because you don't realize your value. And I am so struck as well by what you mentioned, that your perception changed after 20 years of locking people up, and then, you know, having this moment where you realize what the other side of that story is. And that's what we're often talking about. Andrea and I are often encouraging people to listen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that must have been so transformative for you, because it sounds as though it's changed your path in life.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was a pivotal moment in my life and my career. And I think that the project has allowed me to be a better police officer or public servant, because it's bigger than just putting handcuffs on people. And one of the things that we forget to realize sometimes in my profession is that there's a story behind every time we put a set of handcuffs on somebody, that it might not be the immediacy of what happened, but what actually led them there. And if we really want to take a look at, you know, changing the trajectory that this country's on as far as mass incarceration, and probably, I would say, becoming a little bit more compassionate and finding some commonality that we have with the quote-unquote other and bridging that us and them divide. We really need to understand each other's stories because we have a lot more in common than we actually realize, but sometimes we get labeled right. with different things, you know, and that can go across the board, and it tends to keep us divided, and I think we can't get as much work done that we need to help each other by doing that.
Were you surprised by many of the answers on those cards?
Yeah, I continue to be surprised, but then if I think about it, and I think everybody in this room would agree, you know, if you think about the one thing that a kid would say they were missing, because the adult was looking back at what was missing when the behavior started, and it was that positive adult role model. That one person, again, that just cared, that would listen, that was consistent, and that would be there. And so that's one of the big things that we talk about as far as what people can do. And sometimes it's, you know, if people can't write a check and support nonprofits that are doing this kind of work, it's what can you do in your community, or that kid that might be at your house all the time, you're indirectly mentoring them, and you could be changing their path and not even realize it.
Because people mention that a lot. It is something that we... We have generic terms, right? We have these sort of ideas that, well, there's a lack of father figures, or parents aren't involved in the schools. So we have these sort of general terms, but we're talking about, well, then who can step up, right? And you're talking about volunteering, and that's such an important component of this.
Well, and I think we've become a world of technology and heads down and on our phones, and we're forgetting to like look up and say hi and connect, you know, face to face with people. And you know, I think the thing that's been fascinating over the last 10 years, I did not understand this going in, but you really have to also divide the genders when you're doing this kind of work, because what women need versus what men need to prevent recidivism, which means going back in after you've gotten out, you know, getting out of prison, then going back in, that means you've recidivated, or even on the front end, the intervention and prevention, programmatically things have to be very different for women than men. And so we've tended to focus more, probably I would say 85% of our work is with women, because we also know that women that are incarcerated, 80% of them are mothers. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at that statistic and you want to start breaking the cycle of incarceration and the familial legacy, you have to figure out how to deal with the female. And what you said earlier kind of resonated, because I think in some regards, females are maybe a little more afflicted with low self-esteem, or we wear it on their sleeves a little bit more, and we react differently than maybe a male would react. And so end up, you know, self-sabotaging, and criminogenic factors for incarceration I find fascinating, which means that the factors that lead people to prison, the four that we've been working with is previous criminal behavior, antisocial behavior, antisocial environment, and antisocial friends. And those are all male. So for female, not one of those things is a criminogenic factor. It's unhealthy relationships, chemical dependency, and Dr. Emily Salisbury from UNLV is about ready to add anxious depressive symptom and economic marginality. So if you think about doing this work and changing the way and being supportive of women, you know, whether they're going to go in or go out, or their children, you have to take a look at the gender and actually get those things separated in order to do some of the healing that needs to happen.
So that explains why they're scared when they are going to go, when they are leaving, the numbers 80% plus, they're going back to children and families. So of course they're going to want to make money. They're going to want to be with their families. They're going to want to erase the stigma of being a convict.
Yeah, and they're maybe going to go back to an unhealthy relationship in order to survive.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, and when they also get out, it's like, here's your kids, you know, and here's your legal fees and obligations, and good luck getting a job. I mean, it ends up being really a difficult journey. So we've been able to work on some gender responsive specific reentry programming for when they're inside, to start work on building that self-esteem, what healthy relationships are, when they get out, hopefully have them come home to a welcoming community that understands where they've come from, but they've actually done the work that they can on the inside and shown us that we now want to provide some help for them on the outside as well.
Is that reintroduction hard? Because maybe you don't know how much time has passed. It maybe could be a year, it could be 10, and maybe the child is, you know, 15 or 16 years old at the time and doesn't know mom.
Right. Well, not just the family unification, which is difficult. Sometimes the kids, lots of times they're, you know, like the Girl Scout Beyond Bars, the one that first brought me into the prison that time. I always say buy the cookies, because there's some great programs that they do.
Tree falls. I like the tree falls.
The mints.
The peanut butter. They better send you a lot of cookies.
Samoas. Do they submit this?
Now I'm hungry.
I know.
Shortbread.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But the thing that I really appreciated about what they were doing is they were actually bringing the children into the prison to have the meetings with the mothers. So the children were actually going inside and having a family visit, which is critically important to keep that family unification going. Right. And there's a lot of kids out there that have a parent that's incarcerated. I think it's 1.7 million right now in the country. But there's ones that we don't even know because the rest of the family doesn't want them to get caught up in the system and get taken away and parental rights to get lost. So these kids have to kind of like lie about where mom or dad is or something like that. So that's been real interesting. But, you know, if you take a look at where we are today, can you imagine, like, I was in the bathroom today at the airport when I landed, and this woman was complaining because the faucet wasn't working. In my mind, I wanted to look at her and go, you know, can you imagine being in prison for 10 years and getting out and not realizing that they're hands-free a bunch of things because they've said, we don't know how to turn. Right. We thought the faucets were broken. We couldn't figure out how to flush a toilet. Like, for gosh sakes, ordering a cup of coffee at Starbucks, you know, you go up and you're like, I'll have a coffee. What would you like, you know, dark, blonde, or light? And right. then they'll, like, they... their eyes get bigger and you can feel them start to recoil, and then they'll be like, white chocolate mocha, 26 pumps of vanilla. And I'm like, oh, they've been down since the 80s because that was the drink from the 80s.
right.
But just
are there, I know this might sound maybe kind of base, but are there classes like that? I mean, being offered, you know, is that part of it? Just
here's what's changed?
Yeah.
Since you've been
seriously,
in?
Yeah. Yeah, here's what's changed.
Well, technology is a huge, huge thing. And think about how quick it's changing for us on the outside.
Yeah.
Having been down for 10 years, coming out, just even catching up to how fast things are. But yes, we also have with our mentoring program, and we have reentry transition specialists that work with us and for us, kind of guiding them through these kinds of things and having a conversation. If I, you know, we're trying to figure out how to make this work, but I would love to have virtual reality inside the prison before they get out as well, like standing on a busy street. If you think about the sounds that we're yes. exposed to in the city,
yeah.
you don't hear that inside a prison or institution, so it can be so overwhelming.
Well, it's so regimented too, obviously, the way they're, from when they wake up until they go to bed, and to come back out and sort of not be able to know where they fit. That's really what you're looking for, is how do they fit in the world now.
And they've been scheduled.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a protocol, and like you said, and there's a schedule that they do. That's why, like, going from prison to a job or prison to higher education is a huge reduction in recidivism, because you've gone from structure to structure. And education can be a very powerful thing. And there's a lot of institutions that provide college classes inside, and we're big supporters of that because it starts to open their minds up. And we constantly hear from the women and the men and some of the juveniles that we work with, I thought I was stupid. I ended up in special ed. And they actually really weren't. Their mindset was in a survival mode for whatever reason was going on at home, and then they just weren't able to do their homework, and they end up getting put in these places that continues that kind of shame and disconnect from feeling like they can actually fit in and be successful.
We are talking to Detective Kim Boguki. Am I saying that right again?
Yes.
It's one of the hangups that I have. I often get names wrong, and I always want to make sure that I'm obviously paying respect to people. We also have Lizzie Coghill. We want to talk about the golf programs that you have at the country club as well, for right. girls in particular, because we are talking about what the detective mentioned is these economic disadvantages that girls often right. Experience and when they become women. And, you know, this is something that's very prominent in conversations, but what does it mean for a woman's entire life and mm-hmm. how the situations she might end up in. We got a text from the 312 from our good friend John O'Malley, who's a former deputy chief of the U.S. Marshal. He said, what a great cop. This is the perception needed in law enforcement today. 312-981-7200. We are talking about the IF Project movie. So you can go to the ifprojectmovie.com to find out more. It's directed by Kathleen Horan, and we'll find out more about the detective's visit in Chicago when we come back on 720 WGN. Women are the fastest growing segment of the incarcerated population, increasing at nearly double the rate of men since 1985. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios with Lizzie Coghill and Detective Kim Boguki to talk about the IF Project. You can go to theifproject.com to learn more about helping women who are, and mostly women. You also work with men, but for the most part, you're focusing on this population.
Women, and then a lot of work with juveniles too, for the intervention prevention piece, making sure that the women's stories and the men's stories are told so the kids will make better choices. choices, not end up in the back of my police car or following in their footsteps to prison.
Okay. And this seems like something that could be replicated and should be embraced by, you know, departments all over the country.
Right. And it is coming to the Chicago area.
Elgin.
Tell us about the experience.
Yeah, Chief Lally, I met her last year and started, came out and visited Elgin and did a screening at the, I think it's like the something Borden Library. And got really good response from community.
Gilbert.
Met with the police department, went into the jail, and it was very interesting bringing the police officers into the jail because they'd never been inside, and I thought it was a good experience for them to see, like, when we arrest somebody, this is what happens. So tomorrow I'm keynoting at a reentry summit, and then there'll be a screening of the documentary at Elgin Community College tomorrow night from 6 to 8:30, and then hopefully I'll be out in the next couple months and work with the police department and get them connected with a group of formerly incarcerated folks out here to work on some of their youth outreach pieces.
How did the documentary come about?
Wow. We first started, so when I got those first set of letters from Renata, I called Kathleen down in LA and I said, hey, this might be interesting for you to look at. And she looked at them and said, yeah, I'm going to come up and talk to the women. We had a meeting with the women. We really didn't know what we were going to do. And we said, what would you like to do with these? And they were like, well, we want to get our stories out to the kids to figure out how they can learn from our stories and ask for help. And what ended up happening is Kathleen started filming. We built a writing workshop around that question with Amber Flame, who currently is the director of the IF Project. And Kathleen started filming and never really stopped. We thought we were going to only film for like maybe a month or two and put together an education piece, which we do have, that's filmed in the women's and the men's prison, but she kept rolling film for 7.5 years. So the documentary is 7.5 year experience of the women's experience inside the prison, some of them getting out, and then my relationship with them from just kind of a police perspective. So it's actually
awesome.
Pretty powerful. I always like to say, if anybody watches it, it will be on iTunes November 15th. Please do not make fun of my 7 really bad haircuts.
Oh, stop.
Over the years, it's like the retrospective of Kim.
Oh, my God.
See, and that's the thing, the fact that you even have to think about that or worry about it.
I know.
Like that, just, you know, come on. I also understand.
Oh, my gosh.
We all do that. We will continue our conversation when we come back after the news. We're going to take a break here. Again, it's the ifproject.com, and the film is the ifprojectmovie.com, and as the detective mentioned, it's going to be released on November 15th on iTunes. We want to find out more about the girls' golf programs at Silver Lake with Lizzie Coghill when we come back as well. If you have a question or comment, please give us a call or text at 312-981-7200. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis in a moment. You know, I just realized something, Andrea. You know, I miss out on not golfing.
Oh, you're going to...
Because you meet people like Lizzie Coghill, and then that's how you met our new friend, Detective Kim Boguki, who... Did I get it wrong? Boguki?
Boguki.
Say it for me so that I... Because you just have said yes, I've said it right, and
no,
I don't believe
you.
You
said it right, Boguki.
So I often feel as though... and I wish that I could encourage Griffin to play golf. I tried playing golf with you guys at the Arthritis Foundation for years with the Steve Cochran
events. That's a fun outing,
I bought a cute skirt and everything. And
as long as you look good, that's okay.
No, that's just... Because you know what? The thing is that everyone would try to help me swing. They would try to figure out what was wrong with the way I couldn't hit the ball. Because I was a softball player. So everyone's like, you're swinging really well. Something just happens at the very last second.
You got to hit the ball.
But people don't just let me play. They keep trying to fix me. And I'm like, just keep playing. I'll just drive the cart and make sure you have drinks.
I think the key is practice, right?
Oh, I did.
But playing with Lizzie is, oh my God, you're like playing with Annika. I mean, this girl
so
can
much.
Hit the ball, you know, and you're petite, but you're something else. You can hit the ball 300 yards, probably more.
Yeah, on a good drive, definitely. One of the keys to golf, though, is, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head, is you can't have 15 different instructors. If you got a bunch of people chirping at you, you already have so many thoughts in your head that you're so inside of your head in general. So having 15 other people telling you what to do, it's never a good recipe for a good golf swing.
I grew up near Silver Lake, and it was very cool because, you know, I started as a kid playing with my dad and then kind of lost interest and then got into it when I started working mornings here in 2005. And I thought I needed something to do in the afternoon. So I went back and took a few lessons with, not Bert, your dad, Greg, who had been there for many years.
Yep.
And then, yeah, you're right, though. You got to find a good instructor, and you got to keep practicing. That's mm-hmm. the key.
Yeah,
and
if you don't put in the time, you can't expect good results.
You guys are one of the premier golf courses, too, if not the only, especially in the South Suburbs, that feature so many girls' golf programs. Like, there's a girls' golf day that you host at Silver Lake, too.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing it for 3 years now, and we put on a free clinic for young girls ages 6 to 13.
Yeah.
And it's a really fun day that actually WGN helped.
That's right. We
helped
were
a couple
there.
Years ago. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was really nice, but we like to offer free clinics to encourage the youth to come out, and golf is kind of an intimidating sport. You know, there's a lot of barriers to entry per se.
Yes.
It's expensive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of weird etiquette that goes back to like the 1600s, and some
like
of
what?
It doesn't make
can you
sense.
Can you give me one that goes back to the 1600s?
Well, so,
tell me.
Well, I think that it's like when you go to play golf, right? It's more than just picking up a golf ball, picking up a golf club and hitting a golf ball, right? So you get to the first tee and you hit your first shot.
Right.
But then what do? Are you in a golf cart or are you walking? And where do you put your bag? And where do you stand when somebody else is hitting? Are you supposed to be talking? Are you supposed to be quiet? Are you supposed to cheer somebody on when they hit a good shot? Like, those are some basic things that people are very intimidated by.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually created this program this year. We call it the Ladies Golf Social. So we've tried to be a little more approachable with women specifically. I noticed after being, I used to live in California. I worked for TaylorMade Adidas Golf for 6 years and then came back to help with the family business. And one of the things that I noticed was there were so many women who would come out to play in the evening. And I was like, well, why is that? And we started to realize that women felt less intimidated coming out in the evenings when there's nobody behind them.
Oh, right.
And they could feel like they could hit a bad shot and not be holding somebody up. Or like I said, you know, put their golf cart in the wrong spot and not feel like they've done something stupid.
Like,
you know?
Someone's going to yell.
Right. But like, you don't get taught that stuff in a golf lesson. You get taught how to hold a golf club. You get taught how to hit a golf ball and how to hit all the different shots. But you don't get taught to do all those other things. So we created this program on Wednesday evenings after work. We called it Ladies Golf Social. And we did like a 15-minute clinic ahead of time. And then afterwards, we had everybody go out to our Rolling Hills course. So we have two 18-hole courses and a 9-hole course. And our Rolling Hills course is wonderful for not only beginners, but also experts. But this was geared for beginner women or avid golfer women that just wanted a relaxed atmosphere. And so how we programmed the league was that we said, listen, we want you to set yourself up to succeed. We want you to ask questions. We're going to have several instructors that drive around and help you with the things that you never get taught in the golf lesson. And we had about 30 ladies who would come out every week, which was great for a first-year program. And we would have nachos and drink a glass of wine afterwards and nice. Kind of laugh about the, you know, the silly shots and whatnot. But it was the overwhelming response from all these women was just, this is so awesome. I play in a league here and it's so serious and I get intimidated sometimes and I've never wanted, or my husband's play golf and I've always wanted to play with them, but I never felt comfortable enough because I don't know what I'm doing and I don't want to embarrass myself and I don't want to embarrass them. And so it was one of the programs that we implemented this year that I'm super proud of, and we plan to do it next year as well.
Yes. Awesome.
It is such a social environment, and I love that you create a social, a supportive way in which, you know, women can get together and play, because it's not just their husbands or wanting to play in a league. It's also part of business. A lot of companies have golf outings. It's where a lot of people have meetings. You know, I was telling my son, one of his classmates is taking golf, and I thought, you know, maybe it's time for you to pick up golf, because, you know, for in the long run, this is the way a lot of people make deals, or they have conversations that a lot of other people aren't involved in.
Right, and you can play till you retire.
Oh, I mean,
or you can play in your 90s.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We have a gentleman who comes out and plays once a week, and he is 96 years old. And he is amazing. I mean, he plays 18 holes once a week, and it is just, it's the greatest thing to see.
I can tell you're playing 18 holes. So, I do. So
no, honestly,
awesome.
Right?
I know. That's fantastic.
I get frustrated.
I know. We're gonna take you out. We're gonna attempt to. We'll stay with you on the range for a few hours.
I'm gonna go with Lizzie. And Lizzie, you take me out. We'll play
anytime.
Right. Yeah. She will.
I am there all day, every day.
You so, are. Yeah. And you have such cool events too. The glow golf. I'd never played glow golf until a few years ago.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we've been doing a couple of night golf series. So when the lights turn off, we light up the golf course, and it's awesome. It is the most fun that you can have on a golf course, in my opinion, and especially seeing all the golf balls flying through the air from different holes, and you're like, which direction is it coming from? And I mean, it's quite a sight to see, and it's a different experience, you know. And again, it's a little more relaxed atmosphere. It keeps golf fun, keeps people engaged, and you know, you kind of get re-enchanted with golf. Like sometimes you can get bored with playing a 4-hour round with a foursome and doing everything traditionally. And so we've tried to keep things interesting at Silver Lake. And we actually also did a cosmic driving range, which was really fun. So imagine cosmic bowling, but on the driving range.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good time.
That's awesome.
Isn't there night golf, or isn't there glow in the dark golf on Friday?
Yeah, we actually have our final night golf. Oh, yeah, yeah, we have our final night golf series this Friday. Tee times at 7:30, I think, because it gets dark earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We've been talking about that. And you can go to silverlakecc.com for information about all those programs.
Correct.
And
very
events.
Cool.
And the reason I want to talk about the girls program that you mentioned from 6 to 13, you know, I was fortunate enough to play sports. I know Andrea grew up mm-hmm. playing sports. You know, whatever element it is, and we're talking about the IF Project with Detective Kim Boguki about, you know, women, one of the things that, you know, leads to their incarceration is bad relationships, bad and dangerous relationships sometimes,
right.
Economic disadvantage, perhaps mental illness with depression, anxiety, and you know, and I'm not saying that every little girl who has the opportunity to play sports is going to avoid those things, but there are things in your community that can help kids develop confidence and independence. And I mean, not that I was never in a bad relationship, but there's something that kicks in that makes you go, wait a minute, I don't deserve to be treated like this. And but a lot of women, and it happens to men too, do fall into that trap of thinking, this is what I deserve. This is the best I can do.
Well, I actually think some of the stuff that Silver Lake's doing as well, because Lizzie and I have talked a little bit about it, is it's offering opportunity to people that maybe wouldn't think about doing that or could afford to do it or whatever. And the more you can expose young folks to different things, I think, then they get to make different choices. They get to learn a little bit more about themselves. And
yes.
Golf is something that you don't have to be super athletic at. Yes, and by the way, Lizzie crushes the ball. She doesn't just hit the ball. She crushes
so
it.
Good.
So, and she's like, she looks like she needs to eat a burger. I think she's like a double zero. So,
she's got fast metabolism.
So I'm just saying, you don't have to be what, you know, it doesn't have to be that sport mentality. And I think that that's something that can build self-esteem in girls and give them confidence, and young boys. So
yes.
And team building too. I mean, that's all part of the IF Project as well. Team building is so important. When I was growing up, there was the boys golf team at Andrew High School. And then I think there was one, maybe two girls on the golf team. Now, you know, it more girls on the golf team. And so, yeah, I think that goes to team building too. And then that's all what everything you're trying to encourage with the IF Project too.
Well, and also you get those kids out there, and you've got some of, you know, Lizzie's golf pros or the adults that are helping that. So there's a naturally just a little mentorship program that's happening, whether it's, continued beyond that initial contact. It's an adult taking the time to spend time with them and teach them something new, not just about a game, but about themselves.
Which I think adds to your own feeling of self-worth.
Absolutely.
If someone's willing to invest in me, then I must mean something. And again, I'm going to go back to that quote that the woman who said, if someone told me the world needed me, maybe I wouldn't be in jail.
Right.
And
right.
That just really struck me, because you don't realize that there does come a moment in your life where you just think, what difference do I make?
Well, I wouldn't want to be judged for the worst thing I did in my life. I wouldn't want to be judged for the rest of my life. And, you know, you look at 95% of people that are incarcerated are coming home. And the problem is, within the first 3 years, 49.7% are going back in. So we have a broken system as far as people getting out and having opportunity in order to be successful, whether they're women or whether they're men, which does affect the entire legacy thing. I was at an assisted living home the other day, real quick, and I had this 96-year-old woman come up to me and go, I just want to tell you that if you ever think that you can't learn something as you're older, you can. She goes, I had no idea about this part of the population. I'm 96 years old and I learned something today, so thank you. So I think that's part of what's important about sharing stories, whether it's IF or like the work that Lizzie's doing. It's like you have to figure out how to continually educate yourself and other people in order to make change. And lots of times it's by amplifying people's stories and what they're doing.
When people are listening to this now, aside from seeing the documentary, how can people get involved? Is there a way to help fund or volunteer anything, or maybe offer up their businesses for certain programs?
Yeah. Well, I think businesses, the one thing I would say about businesses, I don't know what you're, which in this state, in our state, we have incentive for hiring somebody that's got a record, is really taking a look at what is your policy on not hiring somebody that has a felony. Could you say, okay, I can't hire for these felonies, but I could hire for these felonies, so that people can get out and actually get a sustainable wage job and not have to go back to the things that everybody in this room would do in order to survive potentially. So I think that's what businesses could do. I think that, talking to police departments about the community outreach that they're doing. I mean, if you think of what Elgin's doing, you're going to have police officers working with formerly incarcerated who are going to walk in the room to work with these kids on an intervention prevention thing. When you want to talk about building communities that have been fractured because of some of the issues that have been going on in policing, what better way to do that to bring people to the table that probably do not have a good relationship with you, build that relationship, and then go out side by side to talk to these kids to start repairing in communities that really need it. So I think that's important to see what's going on community policing-wise. And, that's one thing that I will say with the IF Project. The IF Project is what it is because people that have been impacted and have been incarcerated stepped up, decided to share their story. And those of us that are in a position of power and privilege actually kick some doors open so that their stories can be heard to make change.
And it takes the rest of us to listen. That's something.
And tell your story.
Yeah.
One in three people in our country have a record. That's
really?
No joke. One in three people in our country. Have somebody in this room been arrested?
I've never been arrested.
I never have either.
Are you shaking your head in there? You're nodding.
Come on.
But it is true. So that does mean that there are stories that are, or, we probably, one or two of us in here could have probably gone down this path and we didn't. So that is a story that maybe you didn't get caught, or you just had somebody that interrupted your trajectory just a little bit that changed your path.
Bringing it back to mentors too.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Reach out.
Be kind. And that's exactly what it is. 312-981-7200. If you have any questions or comments from the, from the 815. Golf lasts a lifetime because it does not require a team to play. It can be social and it can be solitary. The other one. That's
right.
A good point to that.
Super good point.
We'll take your comments and calls when we come back. If you want to join us, 312-981-7200. It's the IF Project. You can go to theifproject.com and to find out more about the film, it's theifprojectmovie.com. It's going to hit November 15th on iTunes. And tomorrow, the detective will be at the Elgin Community Center screening the film tomorrow night. There's also a keynote. I don't know if this is open to the public, the event that you're doing during the day.
Yeah.
At the Elgin Community Center as well.
I think it's a 100 Symphony Way, whatever that is. And then the community college is screening the documentary tomorrow night.
Well, I'm guessing the information is also available at theifproject.com for the event.
Actually, it's not. Elgin was doing the Elgin.
You know what? They did all the promotion.
It's cityofelgin.org.
Excellent.
And it's on their homepage.
Oh, perfect.
With all the information about where the screening is, too.
Exactly.
What building and whatnot. It's the dining room.
Let's learn more about our guests when we come back. It's Detective Kim Boguki and Lizzie Coghill on the Patty Baskin Show with Andrea Darlis. The IF Project is a feature-length documentary that explores the reasons behind the staggering numbers of the incarceration of women as the fastest-growing segment of the population that is entering prisons. And we have in studio with us Detective Kim Boguki, whose life changed when she met some of the... Well, really, I love that it was a Girl Scout that helped change your trajectory in life, really.
Especially when I was a campfire girl, but yes, it was a Girl Scout. Girl Scout program. Girl Scouts beyond bars.
And we were talking about Chicago as a very segregated city. I would love to, you were mentioning how can other law enforcement departments get involved in projects like this or understanding where our system is failing our communities in many ways.
Yeah, I think it goes back to, too, when you have like police officers and people that have been incarcerated walking into a room side by side to work with kids or to have a conversation with community, and that trust has to be built. You don't just all of a sudden show up at a meeting and go, oh, I'm going to trust you, you're in a uniform, I'm going to trust you, and you're the one that's calling the department or the mayor's office and saying, we're not doing our job. But, how do you sit down and have some really honest conversations about what's going on in this country regarding policing and, you know, some of the racism issues that go back to slavery. You know, I always say if people have 100 minutes in their life, watching the documentary 13, I think is really important to explain how we've gotten where we've gotten and where some of that underlying tension is. And I think it's important for police to understand that as much as community to understand maybe where some of that comes from, because it's generationally passed. And the more we can learn about each other and where that comes from, I think that we can have some honest conversations that aren't being had. And I think some of those conversations have to do with listening to each other's story, which that if question is about answering that question is about talking about your story.
And for those other plans to expand it in other parts of the country as well.
Yeah, we are expanding other parts. Okay. Tucson, Arizona's done it. Richmond, Virginia, we're in Alabama. Going to Trinidad actually next week.
Wow.
To go into their prison and work with their community.
Did you ever think you would get this big?
Oh no, not when I walked in that day. The first day I walked in, I honestly thought I was going to get shanked because I had been watching way too much Locked Up. And but the thing is, that's what, then I had to realize too, that's what people think. That's what the media gives us, and that's what you think is behind bars. So I had to do a total gut check when I walked in the room and went, wow, these people look normal, like people I'd hang out with. And so that was a big indicator for me at that point, because I was in community policing at the time. And I mean, I've done motorcycles and bicycles and arrested people. I've done drugs, some, not literally, but like arrested drug people. But walking in that room, I realized that I had to check my own bias and really take a look at what I thought somebody that's incarcerated is and was, and how I would carry that with me through my career. And I'm not saying that you open up the doors and let everybody out at all, but I think there's a very small fraction of people that need to stay in prison, but you got 95% of people coming home. And so how are we actually rehabilitating them and learning from them mm-hmm. what they needed so we can get those kinds of programs in place?
Absolutely. We'll have to take a break here, and let's continue our conversation in just a moment. You're listening to The Batty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We're hanging out with Detective Kim Bogugi and Lizzie Coghill. The movie is The If Project Movie, and you can go to theifproject.com to learn more about this very important work. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Project Movie comes out November 15th. You can catch it on iTunes. And right now we have in studio with us Detective Kim Bogugi, who is the heroic Seattle police officer who is, it's what it says in the bio. She's like, wimps. She's like, I don't
know.
You're a hero.
Like Bonnie Tyler says, holding out for a hero.
And the writing workshop she created with a group of inmates at a maximum security women's prison. It's directed by Kathleen Horan. We also have in studio with us Lizzie Coghill, who wanted to know more about Silver Lake Country Club. Maybe I'll go out there after my boobs are smaller. We've talked about my breast reduction surgery.
We've been talking about that off the air too. Covered a lot of topics tonight.
Detective's like, I don't want to talk about it. She did
smaller boobs, guaranteed 10 yards off your drive.
I'm saying
on your drive. Yeah,
it ruined my softball career in high school. I was an outfielder.
Yeah, that's why.
You know how hard it is to make that run to first base when you're like getting smacked in the face with your own body. Here, it's all.
I don't know. I can't say I do. I gotta admit.
Let's refocus. Well, growing up in Chicago, I was a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach, and a lot of our lifeguards here in Chicago, and they are drawn to becoming first responders, whether it's a fire department, the police department. I took the Chicago Police Department test in 2001 after 9/11, but by the time they called us up, it takes about 2 years for the process, for the testing, for the background, you know, all that and stuff. And by the time they called me up, I was 8.5 months pregnant, and I was like, you know, I'm not going to make it. But, you know, we choose our paths in life. And for me, it was about wanting to help others, wanting to do something to really be available to the community. I love my city. And I wanted to know what drew you to law enforcement?
Well, actually, probably back in high school, I was involved in CYO, the Catholic Youth Organization, and we lived on the street for a week one summer, and I remember working with the homeless kids or seeing them and going, holy cow, some of these kids were my age or younger, and the way that they had to survive on the street was extremely disturbing to me. And I started college the next year, and I kind of had that kind of just gnawing at me. And in one of my criminal justice classes, a police officer came in and spoke to our class and started talking about what she loved about her job, and what she loved about her job was working with youth. And like all the bells and whistles went off in my head. And so I graduated from Seattle University, which was a great Jesuit college, and it really focused on giving back and being compassionate to everybody you could. And sent an application in for police and fire the same week.
Oh yeah.
And police actually responded first. So
I think that's probably benefits so many people across the country, and apparently now around the world, hearing your story and the story of the inmates that you've worked with.
Listening is so key. You're getting some really great texts. Wow, they just keep popping in. The female detective was very well spoken, and if all were with her wisdom, perhaps the street could be a lot better off with the emergence of convicts to society. Sensitivity training seems to be her gift. And then there's another one talking about a birth control, and then they say, we'll be watching for her to continue doing great work. We hope she can influence many more to be as sensitive as she is. Thank you for your service, and if you need funding for your next project, please make sure that you, Patty, and Andrea publicize it here so we can personally consider supporting it.
And people can go to theifproject.com to find out how to get involved or learn more. And I'm sure, you know, we will try to find out what kind of programs there are in the city of Chicago or within our listening area. Because right now, we're not just being heard in Chicago. At night, we are pretty much carried throughout the Midwest, 38 states in Canada.
And Puerto Rico.
And Puerto Rico.
Yeah, we had a guy call us from Puerto Rico.
Yes, that's right. Where's Javier?
Javier,
he hasn't called us.
He was down there volunteering after the hurricane, right. Hurricane Maria, and then they had that second power outage, so he was down there. He was a former Army?
I think he's in the Army. He was going to be there for a couple years.
Yeah, so planning. He called us. He was listening to us in Puerto Rico. So people are hearing you there, too.
These are all important stories, and I know that getting involved in the community is important to both of you. We were talking to Lizzie about the golf programs available for girls. So you grew up around golf. Did you ever have a choice to not play golf?
No, golf is in my blood. The Silver Lake has been in my family since 1937. So I am a fourth generation Cog Hill, helping run and work at the golf course. So
what?
My dad is involved in the business, Bert. My cousin Amy is involved in the business, as well as my cousin Kelly. So it's been a great opportunity for me, not only to learn the game of golf, learn to love the game of golf, but everything that it has provided me has been such a blessing. And the people that I interact with on a daily basis, our customers, are the absolute best. Like, just brings so much joy, and it gives me a reason to come to work every day.
It's absolutely the best course, and I'm not just saying that because I know it and played it. Absolutely is family friendly. It's wonderful. It's great. And Lizzie's dad, Bert, he plays with Hickory Clubs, mm-hmm.
Shafted Golf Clubs,
which is extremely rare. He could crush the ball.
Yeah, my dad's the ultimate golf hipster.
He is.
On tournament days, he's wearing his plus fours. He's got a button-down shirt and a tie, and he's a member of the United States Hickory Society, and he goes and travels the country in Hickory tournaments, and they go and play these wonderful golf courses the way it used to be played.
Yeah.
With period-relevant balls and Hickory-shafted golf clubs, and they look a little goofy to some people, but it's honestly the coolest thing. And to watch his buttery swing, and you look at the clubs, and he's hitting a spade mashy or a something niblet or giblet, or I don't even know what they're called.
A mashy
and,
niblet, right?
Yeah, and he just hits it so pure. And I'm looking at the head of this club thinking, okay, they make technology, so the sweet spot is so much bigger now.
Right.
And I still hit horrible shots.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And he's got a very, very small margin for error, and he kills it, and he loves it. So at 68 years old, you know, keep on doing what you're doing, Dad.
Exactly.
That's great. Yeah.
You said that the country club has been in your family since 1937. What was the, how did this come into our world?
It's kind of a long story. My dad's a better teller of the story, but it goes back to the turn of the century, and my great-grandfather and his two brothers were traveling to Chicago looking for work, and they were from Indiana, and they ran into a guy, and this was right when electricity started,
uh-huh.
And this guy said, what are you guys doing? And they said, oh, well, we're looking for work. And he goes, well, come work for me. I'm I'm an electrician.
Okay.
And so they ended up wiring a ton of Chicago, and they got invited to a golf tournament at Oak Hills. And they went to this golf tournament and fell in love with it and decided, got a crazy hair and said, you know what, let's buy a piece of property and let's build a golf course. And so they built the original golf course that most people around Chicago know as Cog Hill.
Yep. Right.
And so for many years, my family owned Cog Hill, and then my great-grandfather decided that he wanted something for his family aside from what him and his brothers had. And so he bought a private Masonic golf course called Euclid Hills in 1937, and I think in 38 he purchased the adjacent golf course called Silver Lake, and then they combined the two to make the existing Silver Lake. And then in the 60s we built our nine-hole course.
What an incredible story.
It's because I think of you guys too. Orland Park for the longest time had the moniker World's Golf Center.
Right.
Because there were more golf courses within that
Per square mile,
yeah.
Right.
So the water tower is still the, it looks like a golf, it's like a golf tee with a golf ball on it and says Orland Park, that. World's Golf Center.
Right.
Is it still like that?
It is.
Okay.
I have to ask a silly question.
Sure.
And this is for all of you. I'm not a golfer. Is there a golf movie that you like?
Oh.
I don't know. Like, like Tin Cup is just funny to me.
Caddyshack. Caddyshack, hands down. Bill Murray. Yeah. Come on. Greatest golf movie of all time.
Which Silver Lake shows every summer. Every summer, movie night is Caddyshack.
Holy cats.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's fantastic. Yeah. What's the one with Francis we met? Is it Matt Damon?
Happy Gilmore.
Greatest story ever told.
Oh, greatest story ever told.
Oh, you want a tearjerker?
Okay.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen Happy Gilmore. That'll be my double feature.
Happy Gilmore. Yeah, what about you? Do you have a favorite?
I like Caddyshack. I enjoyed Tin Cup. I just there's something about him imploding on the golf course that just cracked me up.
Where's the game of golf? We've all been there. Yeah, the game of golf is played between here and here.
Yeah.
But I always blame the clubs, don't I? I have this terrible habit. I'm like, I hate these clubs.
It must be the club. Let me try yours.
Right, and then Lizzie takes my club and hits it 300 yards. So
your club does work better.
I think it's operator error.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, the reason I ask about the movies, because obviously we're talking about the If Project movie, which is coming out in November. I wanted to make sure people know the other movie that you mentioned, which is 13 on Netflix, which is the history of...
It's about our 13th Amendment.
About our 13th Amendment and the ramifications of not just slavery, but the rate at which the war on drugs. I know that they talk a lot about, you know, Three Strikes, You're Out is also covered in that movie, and the way in which we imprison people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've watched every single season of Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you, I mean, but there is something about, you know, watching these stories, and of course it's not real, but also thinking about what, you know, they do a great job with the backstories and what leads.
Their character development, or the way that they've portrayed characters and the issues that they've taken on, I think has been written really well. We're laughing because we just, Wentworth is an Australian version, and we started binge watching it before we came here tonight and had a hard time pulling myself away from it.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
That's right.
I know someone who's watching that, I think, right now.
But I do think Orange is the New Black was important. Again, back to what I was talking about earlier, is we do not talk about gender-responsive corrections or criminal justice very much in this country. And Orange is the New Black is the first time we've seen something that's female-focused and the reasons for female incarceration and what it's like for a woman that's actually incarcerated. Of course, they're going to have to sensationalize things. But, you know, some of that stuff, I know that it's happened because, you know, we're in there all the time, you know, working with the women. And we do hear the stories that they go through, not just on the outside, but inside. And if they get released and then they end up coming back.
Right. Is it as bleak? I mean, I know that, like you said, they Hollywoodize it, they glamorize certain things, but I mean, is it truly like that? You have to find a job in prison, whether it's, you know, cooking or, you know,
you
want to
find a
laundry.
Job usually. Yeah. You want to find a job. I mean, in Washington State, I think that you can only make, I want to say, approximately $52 a month. Mm. You want to do something so that you can have commissary. It's a funny thing, if you walk in a women's prison and you say, who in here is doing time for your old man, your husband, your boyfriend? Friend, like
every hand,
70% of the hands will go up. You walk into a men's prison and ask who's doing time for their girlfriend, their old lady, whatever, no hands will go up.
Not one.
Oh my God.
And if you look at the men's books and who puts money on their books for commissary, there's usually money in books. You go into a women's prison, then they kind of a little bit are forgotten, and they are not, you know, people don't always end up. So, I mean, there's some things I know there's pen pal programs, obviously be really safe about that kind of stuff. Don't give your home address out, but there's some organizations, I'm sure, in the area that do stuff that work with people prior to to them getting out. And I think that somebody getting out of prison, like our mentoring program, knowing that there's somebody out there that does not have any attachment to their family or anything like that, that's just that one sounding board that they need, is critically important too, for them to feel like that they can reintegrate with at least one person that is healthy.
I know there's churches too that are involved with making donations and things like that, mm-hmm. especially for a commissary for female inmates as well too. Mm-hmm. So check with your church and, you know, local community organizations too.
And that's why we need to continue to have these conversations, and we'd love to check back in with you as you continue to work with programs around the country and around the world.
And I just want to say one more thing too.
Of course.
Again, I said this earlier, the IF Project is not the IF Project without the people that are incarcerated and the people that have shown up and bravely and courageously and painfully shared their story. And I think that if you're going to do any of this kind of work, you have to make sure that you're always having that voice and those people at the table. Because I think sometimes we all want to do really good things and we forget to have the people at the table that actually have all the answers that we need. And those of us are in positions to make some stuff happen, but always bringing them along the way and having it be a collaborative, not siloed.
Thank you for that reminder.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we can hear you speak tomorrow in Elgin. And again, it's the IF Project, 6 to 8:30, Elgin Community College in Building E, the dining room. And it's free. Go see the film.
And the website, did you have that?
It's if you want to get information about the documentary, cityofelgin.org is for tomorrow's event. And then the ifproject.com for more information on Kim.
And don't forget, November 15th, we're going to check it out. She's already apologized for her hair. I don't know why.
Wait, give the Silver Lake website, yes, too, so Silver people can Lake. Sign up for Cosmic Golf.
SilverLakeCC.com.
There you go.
I want to thank you so much for joining
thank
us
you.
And for the work that both of you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great
you.
To meet you.
Thank you for having us.
Of course, more in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis on 720 WGN.